Let's talk about sleep. Let's make 2019 the last year you suffered through bad sleep. Listen to these studies from Harvard and Johns Hopkins. Chronic sleep deprivation has been shown to lead to depression, diabetes, obesity, and cardiovascular disease. We need 8 hours of sleep. One of sleep's biggest problems? Temperature. It's tough to get good sleep if you're too hot or too cold. It's 2020, and now you have the Pod by 8 Sleep. The Pod is a high-tech bed designed specifically to help you achieve optimal sleep fitness. It was developed by leading sleep researchers after tracking 43 million hours of sleep. It combines dynamic temperature regulation and sleep tracking to enhance your rest and recovery. It learns your sleep habits and adjusts the temperature automatically. That means if you like the bed cool and your partner likes the bed warm, now you can have both at the same time in a crazy comfortable bed. For the next week, get $200 off your Pod and a free gravity blanket, sounds pretty fancy, for a total value of $500. Only at 8sleep.com/pro. That's EIGHT sleep.com/pro. 8sleep.com/pro. Hey, and welcome to episode 17 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast. I am your co-host, Anthony Ciardelli, here again remotely with my other co-host, Husky. How you doing?
Anthony, good, man. Yeah, happy new year.
Happy new year to you, too. I heard you had, I think we both had a mellow new year, but definitely need the rest for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we didn't stay up late enough to catch the New Year's, but just kind of celebrated the next morning. We were, I think, both asleep by like 10 o'clock, so it was a quiet one.
Very nice. Excellent. Yeah, same here. I think we watched the East Coast celebration, and then by 10:30 we were out, so was the baby. Yeah. So good mellow one. So yeah, today we're going to talk the Ducks' last three games, including last night's really thrilling victory over the Nashville Predators. Sorry, brain fart there. And then two losses to the Arizona Coyotes and the Vegas Golden Knights. But yeah, I mean, getting into, I guess, the most recent game first, last night, how did you feel about their performance? It was pretty exciting, huh?
Yeah, it was an exciting game. I saw, I caught the end of it kind of live and then just watched the highlights. And then, another a good start. I mean, Delorier at it again. This guy is, just really carving out a nice role for himself with the team and kind of continues to impress and bring the energy, kind of a great way to start the game off and kind of set the tone that always has a way of getting the bench going and getting the home crowd going. And I thought they played well. Obviously, the 4-2 lead and kind of giving that up in the third, but finding a way to get that second point and just get a win, get 2 points is huge. I thought against a team that is kind of hungry for points right now, too. Like, they're kind of mid-season, but they're almost in desperation mode. I mean, that's a team with expectations, I think, and isn't where they want to be, and it's kind of desperately trying to right the ship and find a way back up the standings. So it's a tough opponent, and they took the play to him, for the better part of the game. Shot totals are kind of indicative of that, and I think the other advantage is getting a team on the back end of a back-to-back game always helps when you can get those at home.
Absolutely, and certainly surprising, considering the success over the last few years that the Predators have had, that they fired Laviolette and the assistant coach Kevin McCarthy today. I think that took all of us by surprise.
Wow, I didn't even see it. that's a shocker for sure. And I think, I guess that, yeah, just really shows the frustration they're having there and the expectation of that they feel like they're in their window now and need to kind of win now with the state of the group they have there at this point. I guess with Forsberg and some of the acquisitions like Duchesne, and they still have Yoshi and Yoshi.
Playing too much Mario Kart there.
I think it was 2 weeks ago. I was listening to some people talk about this, and everyone just kind of was like, yeah, I mean, that was the success they've had under Laviolette. He's a great coach. I played for him in Philadelphia. Just a great kind of players coach and a great motivator. And I played a unique system when we were in Philadelphia, but I love playing for him. I thought he was a great, great coach. And that was kind of one of the guys that you thought was untouchable kind of regardless. So that's shocking news.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he found a job pretty quickly. He's been certainly very accomplished since his days in Philadelphia and with the Predators. So I think he won't be out of a job for long. In addition to that, I wonder if Nashville kind of saw what happened in Toronto with the firing of Mike Babcock and then Sheldon Keefe taking over, and Toronto really jumping up in the standings where many people expected them to be instead of back down near the bottom of the league. So I think that might be a little bit of a motivator as well. And same with the Stars had already kind of righted the ship before Montgomery was fired, but still they've, I wonder that this, maybe all the coaches that have lost their jobs already, performance wise or for other reasons, it just makes it kind of less of a stigma to fire your coach. Maybe, that's maybe just my thought.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And yeah, you've seen other teams do it. And the Maple Leaf situation and when it works. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of just the nature of the beast that every coach just has a shelf life, and with every group of players, and it's eventually going to happen. And in most cases, I guess, unless you're Bill Belichick, but it seems like, yeah, in hockey, that's kind of the trend, and you're just trying to have as much success as you possibly can for the longest amount of time. But all coaching situations have their kind of due course that they're going to run. And he's had a great run there. And I think you're bang on that it's not going to take long for him to land somewhere else for sure.
Now getting to the game, Daniel Sprong gets 2 points. That's 2 points, his first 2 points of the season, his first goal and an assist as well. So technically that's 2 points in two games. I know a lot of Ducks fans were kind of clamoring to see him get up into the lineup in the NHL and kind of help the Ducks with their offensive potency problems. And so far it's worked out through two games, although I think the first game he played in, he wasn't really, wasn't the greatest performance. But he gets a goal, and an assist. And the goal comes on the power play against Nashville. So excellent. Not exactly the shot type of thing you were looking for Sprong. Just pounces on a nice rebound. So he shows some wherewithal in front of the goal. So definitely a good sign there. Fowler gets another goal. Just impressive season by him so far. He's probably going to, if things continue, eclipse his career high in goals scored and maybe threaten his career high in points scored if he can pick it up a little bit assist wise. And then I wanted to hear what you thought about just Fowler's continued success and Sprong.
Yeah, I think Fowler's just having a great year, and just the way the kind of game has evolved, it's just there's nothing, his style of play and just his skating ability alone, it just is tailor made for like the modern NHL. And he just gets around the ice so effortlessly, and just the change of direction, the pivoting kind of edge work, it's all phenomenal. It just looks so effortless out there. And just the game he's developed, he's kind of grown into his potential. And I think this is what everyone expected him to grow into. And as you kind of get that continued experience to pair that with his natural ability to become a great player. And yeah, he's on a team has a little more trouble scoring goals than some others to have that kind of offensive season. I think he's been great this year from the very start. And as far as Sprong, yeah, he's an interesting player. I think I mean, you talk about natural ability with the skating and, yeah, like definitely all the tools. Definitely not an issue. And the offensive talent, the great shot, very dynamic player, which I think kind of tends to jump off the ice and is something that people can notice and grab onto. I think it's probably, I think that was always they're those type of players, and I think they're exciting to watch. And I mean, that's the hard part for a lot of guys is, I mean, it's hard to stand out and look like be a noticeable kind of dynamic player and have that element to your game. Like that is a rare, rare thing that a lot of guys would kill to have, and he's got it. And yeah, he kind of, like I say, like his ability is evident. And his physical attributes are evident as well. And I think for him, it's probably just a matter of the details, probably improved defensive play, I would suspect. I mean, I haven't broken down his film or anything like that, but just with a player like that, historically, that kind of tends to be where the work has to be done. It's kind of defensive zone coverages, you know, just kind of the finer points of the game, maybe. But I think if he can get that down, I'm sure that was part of the point of having him down in San Diego, was to kind of fine tune some of those areas and get him in a bunch of different situations so he can round out his game a little bit. But to have him back, I mean, to see him get back in the lineup, get up, and all of a sudden jump right into a power play scenario, that just kind of further shows that that's never been an issue, his talents and his ability in the offensive zone. It's just, you've got to be a complete player to play in the NHL, and if that's kind of his path and what he needed to work on, I mean, hopefully he's up for good now and can continue the offensive success.
Yeah, there was a Eric Stevens of The Athletic had a great article about Sprong just a few weeks ago before he got moved up to the NHL, and just talking about what the Ducks wanted him to kind of focus on, less risk-taking, better defensive responsibility and positioning, all those things that kind of Kevin Dineen was taking basically as his responsibility now that Dallas Eakins is up in the NHL. So I think if he's continuing to put up points, he certainly will continue to earn himself a spot, you would hope, considering that he's potentially one of the guys who can help the Ducks score goals. Moving on to the before we move on, I thought it was funny after the game, the Nashville game, before Laviolette got fired, but also after, Ducks fans really taking pride in the schadenfreude of the Nashville Predators. That rivalry continues to persist even after the playoffs a few years ago. So very fun to see that. And that had to be, I think, a highlight of the Ducks fans 2020 so far.
Yeah. It was a big win, a good result against a good team, a team that's been a pretty formidable part of the West over the past few years. So yeah, it was a good win for sure. I know it's kind of been a slow, kind of gradual falling kind of down towards the standings, and to be at the bottom hurts, but I think we've seen a lot of good signs for the future. I mean, the standings as far as was never really what this year was going to be about anyways for the Ducks. So just to see a lot of positive signs, and then hopefully this is a win that can lead to more, maybe get some confidence in the dressing room would be great.
Absolutely. So now moving on to some of the more, I guess you'll call it, frustrating games of the week so far, or last week, the Coyotes 4-2 Ducks 4-2 loss to the Coyotes. A problem I've noticed over the last few games that I thought the Ducks had done a good job earlier in the season kind of avoiding and stopping. They had this problem last season, but even against the Predators last night, Coyotes and the Golden Knights, keeping players out from the front of their net. Over the last three games, Opponents really have felt like they've had free rein in front of John Gibson. You noticed a lot of scrambles kind of in front of the net where Gibson had trouble covering the puck. The opponents are kind of jabbing at his pads, jabbing at his glove, keeping the puck alive and really wreaking havoc in front of him. And that's resulted in a few goals, including a couple goals we'll talk about the Golden Knights game. But Coyotes really did the same thing. I thought they really caused a lot of problems. Christian Dvorak was giving the Ducks fits in front of their own goal. Is that something you've noticed as well? Is it just kind of something generally that every team, I mean, I know a lot of that's why they call it one of the dirty areas. It's one of the most violent and hard to hang out places on the ice, which is why, I mean, in your experience, is that something the Ducks are kind of struggling with right now? Or is there a way to improve on that?
I don't know. You just, when you start seeing stuff like that, when like if it happens once in a while, sometimes like as a defenseman, you can kind of get caught on the wrong side of someone as far as body position. And like forwards are good at it too. I mean, it looks like just kind of general pushing and shoving kind of in front of the net, but there's a lot of sciences to it. And I mean, going back to the guys who standing in front of the net, I think I've talked about him before, like the guys who are really good in front of the net, there's a real science and art form to it about kind of putting someone on your hip, or kind of just being able to time where you're going to be in relation to the goalie and the shot and kind of anticipating what angle the shot's going to come, or trying to get your stick available so the defenseman can shoot at it. Like there's a lot that goes into it. But I think for a more elementary kind of take on it, a lot of it just comes down to battle and desperation in front of the net. I mean, whoever is more desperate, you know, and when you start seeing a repeated pattern of forwards kind of batting in rebounds and getting tips on pucks or stuff like that, that's kind of where you see it kind of creeping in over a 2-3 game stretch where it's happening multiple times. That's when you kind of have to address it on a more fundamental level and just kind of decide as a group or as a coaching staff, got to make it a focal point that, hey, like we've got to be more desperate than them in front of our net. Cause you look at these teams that are in the hunt for playoffs, even in December, January, that every point matters. And with the extra point overtime, with the 3-point games, every point's so huge. And I mean, you're seeing, teams are playing so hard, and it's December, January. I mean, guys are diving at pucks in front of the net, whether they're to keep it out or get a stick on it. So I think you just got to look at your battle level and kind of start from there and make sure that's where it needs to be. And then, I guess, from a tactical standpoint, as a defenseman, there was always talk of, like, do your work early as far as body position and box out. So don't wait until the guy's in front of your net to try and establish, and then try and realize that the shot's coming, and then try and get a stick, like try and wedge yourself and your body in between him and the net, or you know, they call it a box out or whatever you want to call it. That's another art form to do that without getting called, but at least kind of make it harder for a guy to get to the net. Or if you can anticipate that point shot's coming, maybe get a couple second head start of getting your stick or getting your body into his hands or something like that, just to make things a little more difficult. And yeah, like in that Phoenix game, I just noticed one goal, I believe it was the 4-2 goal, just off a face-off. But it wasn't much of a face-off play. Like, you know, I mean, there's some pretty good face-off plays, but this one was pretty basic. And the other guy shot for a stick wide. And I don't know. I think the defensive maybe could have just taken a step and gotten over. And that guy's and just kept him a little more towards the corner, and then his stick isn't an option to shoot at. But I mean, it's easy watching on TV, and it's harder playing, obviously. But as a whole, I think, yeah, that's a fair point. That I think that the desperation and the compete and the nastiness even has to pick up on the whole when you start seeing that happen multiple times like we have.
Have you heard any inside info or any experiences from the season so far from your buddy Jason Demers on the Coyotes? I know they're contrary to my preseason prediction, obviously making me look like an idiot and playing pretty well. So now they've got Taylor Hall. Have you heard anything from him about how he feels their season's going or any interesting tidbits that you'd be willing to share?
I talked to him one time when San Jose was in town, a couple of went to dinner with a couple of boys and we gave him a call after and just kind of put him on speaker. And it was more just a kind of nonsensical laughing and chirping. It wasn't much insight into anything hockey, but I think they're always kind of right on the cusp. I think they've kind of got a little bit of a cushion this year. Yeah, the Taylor Hall pickup shows, you can kind of tell, again, like what a GM's thinking, and they think that they've got something this year. They're kind of going to put together a little push and do what they can to see how far they can take it. And all of a sudden, I mean, you got him with the lineup, you got Kessel and some other good young players like Keller, Dvorak. I mean, they've got a pretty nice-looking lineup there. With some upside to boot. So I think, they'll be a team to watch and well coached and always tough to play against. They always kind of seem to look fast and just scrappy. So they'll be tough to watch and a tough draw for anyone. I think, the playoffs, they kind of always seem to be right on the cusp anyways, but they're looking good to get in this year, and they'll be a handful once they get in.
Before we get on with the rest of this episode, let's talk about some sports gambling. Christmas has come and gone, but the Super Bowl is quickly approaching. We've seen just what our teams are capable of this season, and now it's time to get your last bets in before the bowl. Will the Ravens be able to get it done? Will the Vikings continue their momentum after their OT win over the Saints? I bet you have a feeling. Head over to mybookie.ag to make your predictions a reality. MyBookie is one of the most trusted in the industry. If you're looking for a sportsbook to make some bets for the bowl games, MyBookie is where you want to go. Football not your thing? No worries. MyBookie has got it all, from the NBA to the Premier League. They've got the fastest payouts and the best promotions, and a very helpful 24/7 customer service team. You can even pool your bets together for a bigger payout. Let's say you've got a couple of big favorites this week. Parlay wagers let you bet multiple games together, and if they all come through, you win big. MyBookie has more lines and better odds for the player than any other sportsbook around. If you join now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you'll get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. All you have to do is use our promo code BELIEVE, that's BLV, to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code BLV to get your extra cash from MyBookie. Bet, win, get paid. Absolutely, definitely. And a positive thing I take away from the Coyote game, I really loved the Jones goal. I mean, that might be my favorite goal of the year for the Ducks. Just is so kind of the passing, first of all, between Delzato and Sam Steele and Jones to finish it off. Or it was Sam Steele to Delzato to Jones. It was crisp. It was defensive participation in the offense, Sam Steele showing what he's capable of with that cross ice pass, and then Jones just with the awesome Max Jones, just the unbelievable foresight to lay his stick all the way down flat and keep it in his hand, just create a huge target for Delzato to pass to, and all Delzato had to do was just kind of bank shot it off of Max Jones's stick and into the net. I thought that goal was unbelievable, and I think if you're a Ducks fan, that's what you hope for in the future. Kind of it had all of the makings of what the Ducks, I think, need to do to succeed in the future. Have a young player, a couple young players participate in the offense, defense jumping up, offensive creativity. I thought it was great. Did you have any thoughts about that goal?
Yeah, I liked that goal too. I thought it was a nice play by Steele, kind of coming in on the just a subtle little play, but just little delay and kind of open up the stick and kind of buy some time. And yeah, the KG veteran, Delzato, I love when the D getting up there in the rush just to kind of create and make yourself an option and yeah, coming up the backside. And that, I don't know if I've ever seen stick positioning like that, but yeah, like you say, I just created a huge target and it was great to, well, I don't know if that's something he was taught or if it was just kind of spur of the moment. But just, yeah, to lay your stick down now and just kind of give a little bank, a bank option almost was, yeah, it was a great play. Like I say, creative and innovative. And, you love to see that. Yeah. Like, I don't think I've ever seen goals scored like that. So that was good stuff.
Absolutely. So moving on to the Golden Knights game, tried to go sandwich a couple negatives or a positive with a couple negatives. unfortunately, I thought that was their worst game of the season. 5-2 loss. They were getting outshot. Gibson had to be, had to play his best, but I mean, he couldn't do it alone. This is the game specifically where I noticed their lack of compete in front of their own goal, I guess we'll call it. And you could tell that because the refs actually had to earn their keep on the goal that Manson, the own goal that Manson had. You saw, forget if it was a linesman or the ref, really skate in. He saw the puck the whole way, didn't blow the whistle. And unfortunately, Josh Manson just happened to shovel it into the back of his own goal. There were a lot of unassisted goals as well. For the Golden Knights, which I think goes to show maybe some bad turnovers in the offensive zone. I'm thinking specifically of the Stone goal. So not a great game. I'm wondering, do you have any idea, I mean, in your experience, what happened with Josh Manson there? Was it just maybe he thought he heard the whistle or because it seemed, I mean, not that he would do it intentionally, but relatively intentional the way he kind of moved his stick.
Yeah, that was a weird play, to say the least, and just kind of a weird sequence. And yeah, obviously very weird finish. Yeah, I think it's probably you see the puck land, like just sitting there, and clearly you know it's not covered. So yeah, I mean, the instinct is there. You just want to get in and get your stick on it, or maybe he was trying to kind of almost like a one-handed backhanded toe drag to get that thing out of danger and just ended up kind of bunting it with the bottom part of the stick instead. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm just glad that I was out of the league before having to go play in that Vegas barn with those guys. It just seems like they just kind of come in waves and they're just kind of relentless and the crowd gets going. That's got to be a tough, tough place to play. And tough night for the boys there. And just with the speed and the tenacity of just the forecheck, it's just like, looks like one of those games where you feel like you just can't even breathe as a defenseman. But yeah, I mean, I think in those games, you just got to kind of try and weather the storm as best you can. And there's not really any margin for error. You just got to try and survive the first half of the game and then hopefully get some good goaltending and get it to overtime or something like that. And if that doesn't happen, obviously there was a couple of, I felt like we're kind of a little more too casual plays, which we haven't really seen a lot of that this year. And I think it's probably accurate of one of the toughest games, toughest performances for the Ducks. And I mean, that's just a tough barn to play in there. And anything other than kind of letter perfect execution, that's what you're going to get on a night like that. And yeah, just a couple kind of casual outlet passes that, I mean, they get intercepted and that they were buzzing. Vegas was buzzing that Smith, Marchessault, Carlson, guys are still getting it done. I mean, they just seemed to be everyone through up and down that lineup was just flying. So that was a tough one. One thing I noticed, a couple things, rather than just kind of, yeah, it was bad. It was a bad game. So a couple things I noticed on the March or so penalty shot, I was wondering, like, if they're kind of more lenient on that the puck always has to be going forward, or if they've kind of loosened that up to allow for some kind of fancier moves, because he almost came in and he was almost skating back towards the bench with the puck by the time he shot it in. Like, he came in, kind of dipped down on the sharp angle and came in on his forehand and then just held it. But he was almost skating backwards towards the bench. Like, the puck was moving back when he shot it in. But I don't know. It was a nice move in the practice, in like a practice shootout. But that was just something I noticed. I just want to double check that rule. But it's kind of an oddity that I noticed. I don't know if you can challenge that or what, but I don't.
Yeah.
Did you see that penalty shot goal?
Yeah. No, that was pretty interesting to me. I for a second I got it confused with the save that Gibson made in the Nashville shootout win. That one was unbelievable. We even forgot to mention that, but it's a strange kind of because the puck has to be moving forward, I think, but the player doesn't necessarily have to be, theoretically, right?
Right. But in that instance, they were both, but like no one said anything. Like none of the Ducks players and the goalie or the coaching staff, no one seemed to bat an eyelash. So yeah, I guess I just have to let it go.
Well, I mean, it is an interesting point to make, because it's kind of a feeling ever since I've started covering the Ducks, and every team has this, where fans think the refs are out to get them. But normally for Ducks fans, it seems to be a lack of penalty called in their favor.
Yeah.
and too many penalties called against them. But so I'm surprised that I didn't hear more about that. I mean, much credit to you to even notice that, because at first I didn't, but that is a good point. Now watching it, it certainly, I think could have been, I don't know if you're even allowed to challenge that or if the ref just has to notice it live, but yeah, I think you got a point there. I think a case would be made if they were able to challenge it.
Yeah, that was a good opportunity for a tweet. I should have tweeted that.
The second tweet ever.
Hey, yeah, I could have missed my chance.
Before we start this final segment of the show, let's talk about a New Year's resolution. Guys, it's 2020, and you know what that means. It's time for some better personal hygiene. Listen up. Hair down there is so 2019, so if you're going to pick up a New Year's resolution this year, it's to take care of your equipment bag. Manscaped is making it easy with their grooming products. Obviously, you want hair on your head and not down below the belt. I think many a lady will tell you that, or guy or lady, and that's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag your equipment bag. Manscaping accidents are finally a thing of the past, and don't use the same trimmer that you use on your face for your undercarriage. Just don't do it. That's gross. Manscaped also has the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, at manscaped.com. Start the new year off right by using the best tools for the job. Your nuts will thank you. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code BLEAV.
And the other point of note, it was just kind of another subtle thing, was Silverberg, who I know we're going to talk about having a great season, and he scores a goal like a second after the penalty had expired. So it wasn't a power play goal. And I just remember, like, as a player, I was the absolute worst. I was like the penalty killer. So you do all this job and like you kill off the 2 minutes, but then, so that's good. But then all of a sudden, like if they score 2 seconds earlier, you don't get a minus. But like you battle for a minute and a half, and then the guy jumping on the ice is even worse, because you just jump on the ice, literally take a stride, and it's a minus. So that was, I just remember that just brought back memories of how they said, oh, the penalty just ended, and seeing the guys skate back on the ice as the Ducks scored. Like, God, I used to hate that.
That's why you gotta become a proponent of all these new school fancy stats. The new school fancy statters hate plus minus. They think it's the worst stat possible in the NHL. So maybe you've got some commonality there with them.
Yeah, I mean, even going back to when I was playing, it was always some people kind of thought it was the perfect measure as a player, and some people thought that it meant nothing. It was the most overrated stat in hockey, and it usually kind of depended on where your plus minus was at that season, how much you were leaning one way or the other. I always thought it was the best thing I heard about plus minus is that if you're really high, that usually goes along with, being on a good team helps, but that's usually a good indicator of having a good season. And if you're really low, that's usually a good indicator of having a tough season. But anywhere kind of in and around even par is usually pretty good. But even par makes me think, have you seen the Mike Commodore stuff with the green jacket?
No, not from memory.
Oh, every year he's doing it kind of a little more prominently every year now, but he has the green jacket is obviously the Masters. So the person who has the lowest plus minus of the year in the NHL gets his green jacket. And he has he just posted the leaderboard, and there's a couple of guys on Detroit who are like minus 35 or something. Talks about how they're having a really strong run at the green jacket.
That's creative. I like a lot of his stuff. I like his insider stuff, even if it's not entirely all accurate. It's pretty funny. So I got to check that out. That is really good. It's interesting. Yeah, the plus minus thing too. I mean, just from my experience in amateur hockey, the way a defenseman changes. I mean, when it's a matter of just stepping on or stepping off the ice, on defense, would you almost have more of an advantage because your teammates are changing when there's maybe an offensive rush going on and you have a chance to step off the ice?
That's a whole game within the game as a defenseman, is the plus minus, and there's plus minus etiquette. So if you're changing as a defenseman and if you're getting towards the bench and say, for example, you've been in the D zone, you're blocking shots, whatever, and the puck goes up the ice, and you're going to change. And there's kind of like, there used to be kind of like a 2-3 stride rule where, like, if you're within 2 or 3 strides of the bench when the change was going on and your team scored, those two defensemen would come back to the bench and let the 2D coming off kind of go up and collect the plus.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, whereas if you were past 3 strides, and then you could feel free to kind of jump up, and technically you got to get up in the play and like get your gap and pre-gap and all that stuff. So you have to get up the ice, but there was a certain kind of radius that if you were within that radius, it was kind of expected you would come back to the bench, and especially if you were like a young guy. And a veteran was coming off the ice, then it was like 5 strides, then you'd have to come back.
You'd actually have to hop off the ice back onto the bench.
Yeah. And then those guys would kind of skate up and collect the plus. And it was just kind of being a good team guy. And because, I mean, those stats, that was a telling stat as a defenseman back then. And so the difference between being even and being minus 10 or plus 10 could mean a lot of money with arbitration. So there's a lot of kind of stuff within the game that would just kind of fall under being a good form as a teammate to do that. I'm not sure how much that would still exist. But then as it kind of got in my later years in the career, you'd see guys with their three hardest strides they'd take all game was if they're a 2-on-1 up the ice and they were getting off the bench, they'd be in a rush to get to that fourth stride to kind of get immunity from coming back to the bench so they could get a better chance at the plus. But yeah, all those little things, it was kind of fun.
That is hilarious. That's very interesting. I never knew that. That would freak me out. I mean, that's something I would never think of if I were a young player coming into the league. I'm sure I would get in trouble for that. And if my hockey career had unfolded differently. Speaking of Jakob Silfverberg, we spoke about earlier, he gets elected to his, I believe, his first All-Star game, which is pretty awesome. Congrats. Well-deserved. I've always thought of him kind of as a Patrice Bergeron light, but then you could always argue that Bergeron's been on a good team, specifically now such an offensively talented line that he just, like we were talking about with plus minus, just an opportunity to put up more points than maybe Silfverberg does now on a team that's struggling offensively. But just an all around, I think, two-way game and offensive skill set combined with just a smart player. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well said. This has been a good stretch of years he's put in and just performed at a high level for the Ducks. I mean, you said it, like a very cerebral player, very responsible up and down the ice, but highly skilled, great offensive instincts, great offensive player, great shot, great hands, good vision. He's the total package, and he's put in a lot of good years here for the Ducks. I thought that was great. The extension last year, he's just become kind of an institution here. And just Mr. Reliable, you know what you're going to get year in, year out. So that's happy for him to finally get the recognition on that level and make an All-Star game.
And I think also a very underrated, well, maybe not underrated, but a very smart Bob Murray trade in terms of timing. Silfverberg comes and really cements himself as, like you said, an institution. And Bobby Ryan, unfortunately for him, goes to Ottawa and kind of drops off pretty quickly. And you know, he's obviously entered rehab or something of the like over in Ottawa. So wish him all the best, but well-timed in terms of maximizing your assets for Bob Murray.
Yeah, I think Bobby Ryan, I mean, what a talent, like kind of of that era and his draft class. I mean, just a phenomenal skilled player and a great guy too. Obviously he's had a lot of some injury stuff and those things are just kind of luck of the draw or bad luck, and so you hate to see what injuries kind of pile up on a guy, and that definitely kind of affects your performance and that kind of thing. But yeah, luckily for Silfverberg, he stayed healthy he's performed at a high level, and it was a good pickup. And I think I don't think there was didn't come here with a lot of fanfare. But as really, I mean, during the Boudreaux years, still with Randy, doesn't seem to matter who the coach is. He just kind of continues to perform. It's impressive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Very impressive. So let's get to the three stars. Considering we've just wrapped up the holiday season, but I think we're still within striking distance. Let's talk about three best Christmas gifts you got that were hockey related. They can be a material good or something that happened in your career. I know, if I remember correctly, you had an excellent, timed Christmas gift in this kind of in the more abstract type of way.
Obviously that was the big one. It was my first call up. I was just getting ready. I booked my flight home. I was playing in the Ducks farm system in Portland for Kevin Dineen. Actually, we talked about Kevin Dineen earlier. He was coaching us, great coach. Learned a lot from him. And Dino skated over to me. I think it was the last practice. And I booked my flight home. I was excited to go home and see all the family and friends and kind of unplugged for a couple of days. And yeah, I remember it was the end of practice, and old Dino skated over to me and said, I gotta talk to you about something, and kind of gave me the news that I'd kind of been waiting for. And it's ironic that, yeah, I mean, this was, I think of all the times over the years, you kind of monitor what's going on with the big club. And I mean, in the minors, you're kind of watching the games always of the big club, just to see how everyone's doing. And I mean, it sounds kind of barbaric, but you're always looking to see kind of what the injury situation is, and just for kind of what that could mean for your team or yourself or your buddies who are, like, say, forwards or goalies or anything like that. Like, just always watching with interest. And I think at that point I'd almost like stop watching and just kind of reserved any kind of, not hope, but I wasn't really actively watching. I just kind of thought, it's going to be you're in the minors, and was just kind of going about business in Portland. And then yeah, go figure, when you stop paying attention, then get the news at the end of practice that I was going up. So that was a pretty cool Christmas gift for sure. And then I guess
I don't mean to interrupt, but according to Hockey Reference, your first NHL game was December 23rd, 2006. So 2 days before Christmas. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So I guess it must've been, yeah, practice on the 22nd. And then, yeah, I flew out that night. And then, yeah, we were playing in Phoenix with Wayne Gretzky on the bench. So I was just like, that was just a little something extra to add to it. I believe we ended up losing that game, but I thought I was happy, like, personally with how it went. It was just kind of a dream come true for me, and had no idea what the next 6 months were going to include, but that was definitely a huge moment in my hockey career, and kind of definitely was happy that I made the decision to stay back and kind of give it one more try rather than go to Europe. That was kind of a big decision that summer before. It was either to go to Europe for more money or to stick around to try and get that first NHL game. So yeah, that was a cool Christmas time moment. The other two were probably what jumped immediately kind of to mind was the annual Christmas gag gifts that always take place in dressing rooms. And there was 1 year in San Jose after Dex went up to San Jose, my first year there. I remember it was my first year in San Jose, and I was coming off ankle surgery, and I was still trying to kind of find my legs, and then probably lost a good step from my days in Anaheim. I was still trying to kind of recapture that and work up to speed. And we were about halfway through the year, and things were going okay. The team was doing well in San Jose. Personally, I was kind of doing okay, but I was hoping for better, and was just kind of frustrated with how the year was going. And I remember the boy, I mean, he's a great crew there in San Jose. Awesome, awesome guys. And kind of nothing was offsides, and it was all a lot of chirps, and like it was great. But the boys got me, and kind of personality wise, I always tended to be a little more quiet and that kind of thing. So the boys got me, unwrapped it, and it looked, I could tell by the wrapping, and I unwrapped it, and it was a pylon. And I took it to mean, like, man, these guys are calling me a pylon. Like, I was so, like, I was so sensitive, guys, about my, like, skating. I was like, I was just like, man, I like threw the pylon down, and like the boys are just going crazy laughing, and I was laughing too. And on the inside, I'm like, man, I'm trying, like, I'm not as fast as I used to be, all right? Like, but no, they And I guess it was more along the lines of using the pylon as like a megaphone to speak up or whatever. But anyways, there was always a ton of hilarious stuff. And then as I kind of started getting into my 30s, and then the gag gifts usually kind of tended to revolve around I get a healthy dose of gray in my beard, so it'd always be like the Just for Men gel to get the gray out of your beard, or like Rogaine for like a little thinning hair up top, or just ruthless stuff, man. These guys are ruthless. But it was always good for a laugh, and always a kind of funny to see what everyone else got, and funny to kind of have a good laugh at yourself too. So those are, I guess, those are my memories of kind of Christmas time and hockey and that kind of thing from the pro game anyways.
Those are great. Those are the pylon and the Just for Men. Those are hilarious. And obviously I noticed also on Hockey Reference, your first NHL point was Boxing Day, that same, the second game of your NHL career, right? An assist.
Yeah, it was a greasy assist. I think it was in the neutral zone, and I just chopped it off the boards, and I think the other two guys did all the work. But yeah, I got a nice greasy assist in my second game, so that was a nice gift for sure. That was another good one.
There you go. Well, mine are kind of, I mean, I try to think of the funniest ones. The first one,
yeah.
Not so much funny, but more just like little kid. I think I got my first tickets to my first NHL game on Christmas or in my stocking. And it was Bruins versus Penguins, I believe in 1995. So I was stoked about that. And I just remember it was one of the first or second years of the Fleet. It was called the Fleet Center back then. And I don't think Mario Lemieux was playing. It was kind of a weird era for the Bruins where they had Neely was injured. They had Rick Tocchet. I think they had Kevin Stevens. He had just been on the Penguins and he was playing on the Bruins. So it was kind of an interesting iteration of the Bruins. But I just remember this drunk guy hanging over the balcony of the Fleet Center, yelling at Tom Barrasso, just screaming at him. And I looked it up. I tried to find the exact game on Hockey Reference, and if I found the right one, I don't even think it was Barrasso in goal. I don't think, which is funny. So the guy might have been so drunk he didn't even know who was in the Pittsburgh goal.
That's very possible. Yeah.
And then my other ones were pieces of equipment. So one of them was when I was younger. Did you ever see or hear of the Trilage, the triangle shaft hockey stick? It was supposed to be made for like helping with your shot.
No, I never. I thought I heard of every gimmick of all time, but no, I never heard of that one.
So my dad got me the triangle stick, and my teammates were fascinated. I mean, it was young enough where they're like, oh my God, what is that? Like, I mean, at least not to my face being made fun of for it, but that was probably when I was maybe 11 or 12, up until high school, one of my teammates who was a goalie, I was like, man, remember your triangle stick? That thing was ridiculous. And looking back on it, I had an absolute muffin of a shot. I mean, it was just atrocious. So maybe that was my dad trying to help me get some velocity behind my wrist shot. But that thing was not scoring me any goals on on the release or quickness.
What was the thought of that as a training aid of the? The triangle was supposed to help the grip, or it was just supposed to make it harder so that when he used a regular stick, it was easier?
I think it was about rolling your wrist. It was supposed to be used in games and practices. It was somehow about rolling of your wrists, and maybe the follow through of the shot was supposed to be easier. Yeah, it was, but it didn't, I mean, it didn't work. I had an absolutely horrible shot until I started doing, we'll call it the puberty related wrist exercises. I didn't exactly have a good shot. it's amazing how that shot really has come around in Meds League since I got married.
That's classic.
And then the last one was, I think it was probably in my mid 20s. My mom got me a gift certificate to Pure Hockey, which was the hockey store that was nearest to me when I was living in Boston. And I I thought I was, I bought myself a pair of the white Reebok 11K skates, and they only had neon laces, neon green laces at the time. So yeah. I don't know what I was thinking. I knew at that point that, I mean, I should have known before then, like, you don't wear white skates and you definitely don't wear neon green laces. So yeah, it was a fashion statement, to say the least. And I got heck beyond belief by all my opponents.
Yeah. You got a thick skin to wear that. That's good though.
Yeah, absolutely. So my skin definitely thickened, and the excuse I would use was, which was BS because I bought them on my own with a gift certificate, was my mom bought me these skates for Christmas, and I couldn't return them. It would be insulting. I mean, yeah. I have to wear them, but in reality, yeah. I chose them for myself. So the secret's out.
Nice. That was a good pick.
Yeah, thank you. So that, and I wore them until just a couple of years ago, and they were really narrow. My feet were in extreme pain. So,
still with the neon laces?
No. Those were gone as fast as I could find a pair of regular white or black laces. I got rid of those real fast. But yeah, I think that'll do it. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's it.
Good times. Well, thanks for coming on. As always, if you want to find me, I'm on Twitter at Delly Tweets. That's DellyTweets. And Kent on Instagram at HUSK_VERNA. And you can always find him at his coffee shop, Huskins Coffee in Santa Ana. I think till next week, Kent, have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Sam. You too, man.
Talk to you later.